Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Fuck Radio 313 Flash production. Thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy Radio Show, live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, and for the first time, live on YouTube on the Comical Sports YouTube channel. What's up, everybody tuning in on YouTube? I'm sorry for the YouTube people if you couldn't see me, you know, bopping out to music, because our introduction music is fire, and unfortunately I couldn't translate that over to the YouTube. If you're listening on Open Talk Radio, this may not apply to you, but go check out our YouTube channel, Comical Sports. It is, you know, shooting back up, but if you want some really old breaking news, like reacting to Deshaun Watson's contract extension and the Miami Marlins COVID outbreak from last July, you can check that out as well. We got a great show planned for you today, and a lot of times I come into the show and say, you know, not really a whole lot to talk about. Something I do at the start of shows is I'll go check out MLB scores, because checking out MLB scores is just something to do when we have live afternoon baseball, like the YouTube game of the week between the Twins and the Cleveland Indians, which is, by the way, 10-2 Twins over the Indians in the ninth inning. Or you can talk about the Marlins beating up on the Brewers 6-2. Sometimes we like to talk about live baseball on our Wednesday and Thursday afternoon because I like the idea of having live radio and being able to live react to stuff. But this week that may be wholly unnecessary because there is so much to get to here on the radio show. Again, follow before I finish shamelessly plugging, make sure to follow on Instagram, Comical Sports Memes, Take It Easy Podcast, and Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. You can also find Open Talk on Facebook. And make sure if you're listening on YouTube, check out Open Talk Radio. And if you're subscribing on Open Talk, check out YouTube. Okay, plugging is done. Let's get right into it, because as of roughly 2 hours ago, as we come on the air, Teddy Bridgewater has been traded to the Denver Broncos. Not that the move is hugely significant. It's about as significant as Nick Foles getting traded last year to the Chicago Bears for a fourth-round pick and the Bears being willing to eat a bunch of salary, but still pretty important for the news cycle that exists around this NFL draft and exists around the NFL in general, because we have a quarterback move, and quarterback moves seem to matter a lot now in the modern NFL, so that's kind of cool. We're also seeing, out of pretty much the five, there were five quarterbacks available at the beginning, and now we're starting to see the 49ers pick come into focus, which we'll talk about later, and we're starting to see Justin Fields ever so slightly fall to the perfect pick that I want now that the 49ers are about to be idiots and pass on him. But we'll get to that in a bit. But let's talk about the Bridgewater move on the surface, because there are some different reports that go along with it. So here's the time frame of events as we stand right now. Teddy Bridgewater was traded from the Carolina Panthers to the Denver Broncos in exchange for a sixth-round pick. Based on this reporting, it appears that the Broncos are going to eat most of the salary here. It's not like the Panthers are agreeing to restructure and eat some of the money so Teddy can go play for the Broncos at what would have been about $21 million last year, or I'm sorry, $21 million for the upcoming season if Teddy, one way or another, he's going to get that money. I don't know if he took something less to facilitate a trade, which portion is being paid by Carolina, which portion is being paid by Denver. We don't know that yet, but based on the fact that he only went for a sixth-round pick, it seems like a good portion of his contract is going to be paid by the Denver Broncos. So then the news from Ed Warner comes in after that, that still this does not deter the Broncos from picking the quarterback at number 9 or trading up to get a certain quarterback, Justin Fields, trading up to get Justin Fields in the draft. But that this is just a supplemental trade because George Patton, the new general manager of the Denver Broncos, was second in command behind Rick Spielman, presently the GM of the Minnesota Vikings. He was second in command when the Vikings took Teddy Bridgewater, and he was an instrumental figure in the draft pick of Teddy Bridgewater back in 2014. So that's the move George Patton makes, and gets his guy in for the Denver Broncos. And what's interesting about this move from a purely football standpoint is that Denver was in the Jimmy Garoppolo running, and Teddy Bridgewater kind of resembles that skill set. I think Teddy Bridgewater is a little more limited than Jimmy Garoppolo, and Drew Lock obviously is the raw skill set. Drew Lock probably works better with the deep vertical threats instead of these like short passes, as we've seen with Teddy Bridgewater. Teddy Bridgewater made Robbie Anderson relevant, or Joe Brady made Robbie Anderson relevant, whichever way you want to view that relationship and the dynamic in Carolina, that Teddy Bridgewater might be a better fit paired with Cortland Sutton than like a Jerry Jeudy or per se like a Tim Patrick or whoever else the Broncos want to go with at that wide receiver spot. So again, doesn't deter them from moving Drew Lock. Drew Lock will probably be on the roster, but the Teddy Bridgewater to the Broncos move seemed confusing, but everything that's gone on with the Panthers and the Broncos over the last 2 years has been confusing to me. Generally, poor management. And the thing I've said about the Panthers that just makes me so happy is that I said the Carolina Panthers are in a difficult position when they signed Teddy Bridgewater, because this is a way back machine with the Take It Easy podcast. But back in 2019, we did a Rebuilding the Carolina Panthers series. And one of the things I said is, if you keep Cam Newton, which they did not, and you keep Christian McCaffrey, when his value is the highest, you're going to subject yourself to mediocrity and never be able to get yourself out of the rut. And so guess what? The Panthers signed Robbie Anderson, signed Teddy Bridgewater, and I said in the moment, this doesn't make sense. This feels like I had made the joke, actually, on Comical Sports Memes, follow, subscribe, or follow and like and all the fun stuff there. But I said that it just feels like the Jets with more steps, like that you're subjecting yourself to 5-11 mediocrity, and you're going to get stuck in this cycle of number 7, number 8 picks, kind of what the Chicago Bulls go through in the NBA. You just get stuck with your Kobe White and your Wendell Carters until they finally made the big move to get Vucevic, which, by the way, confirms that Nikola Vucevic is an empty stat guy because the Bulls have not gotten better with Nikola Vucevic. Also, Zach LaVine has been injured. That's another conversation. But they're still 4-3 without Zach LaVine. So the table hasn't been ripped out from under them. Washington's going on a win streak, too. But that's another thing for next week once there's no more draft coverage. Teddy Bridgewater and Robbie Anderson, and what the Panthers did was just good enough, I felt, to go 5-11, but never actually help you improve your roster. And lo and behold, the Carolina Panthers went 5-11 last year. I did not expect it would be as perfect as it was, but the Carolina Panthers also missed out on the quarterback position because Teddy Bridgewater was never a long-term option at quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater, they paid him like a backup quarterback, or at least an upper-tier backup slash lower level starter, like a fringe starting quarterback. That's what they paid him to be. Even they didn't believe Teddy Bridgewater was their long-term option. Why? Because they were able to move him with almost no cap penalties after one season after his contract. Okay, so Teddy Bridgewater is in an interesting place where he's just been moved to Denver. The Panthers are going to be perfectly mediocre. The Broncos are perfectly mediocre. It's a combination made in heaven. And Carolina finds themselves in this perfect, perfect purgatory where they can trade for Sam Darnold instead of waiting out the quarterback game, which, by the way, if they had just waited until after the first round of the draft to move Sam Darnold, they might have actually worked out pretty much the same way, or they could have waited for, I don't know, Trey Lance, Justin Fields to start sliding to pick 8, which helps them hold all the chips. But now, you know what? Enjoy your 2 years with Sam Darnold. I'm sure that's going to work out swimmingly for you guys. But it just would have left more chips on the table. It's why I'm surprised they're making the move before the draft, especially when Teddy Bridgewater only got a sixth-round pick. I guess making the move before the draft ended up being like a smart option, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting place Carolina finds themselves in. Just moving him for value, I suppose. Like, the Cardinals got burned with the Josh Rosen thing, and it's the most prominent example I can think of where they waited too long to move Josh Rosen and then got like 70 cents on the dollar, which still ended up being a nice robbery because they only got a second and a fifth for Rosen. But that actually looks pretty good in hindsight, but it was a bad deal at the time. Because just because they fleeced the Dolphins doesn't mean that the Cardinals could have gotten more. By the way, the Cardinals, who used that draft pick to select Andy Isabella instead of DK Metcalf, just saying, the Cardinals ended up making out pretty well from that, even though they probably could have and should have gotten more from the Josh Rosen trade. And so this is the interesting place that I found the timing of the Bridgewater move, which was, why would you do this before the draft? Same thing with the Sam Darnold thing. The Panthers are basically taking themselves out of the quarterback game before the draft even gets here. So I guess they decided that they didn't want one of these quarterbacks in this draft class. Okay. I mean, there's a chance that there's a bust potential, and you're trying to see what Sam Darnold has in the tank, and you're committing to 2 years of Darnold because why would you trade for him if you're not going to pick up his fifth-year option and give up a second, a fourth, and a sixth for Sam Darnold? The timing of the trade didn't make a lot of sense, just like the timing of the Teddy Bridgewater trade didn't make a lot of sense. But I guess value matters in this conversation or this stage. Maybe not so much for Bridgewater because they only got a sixth rounder for him. And I assume they probably could have gotten the same sixth rounder on draft day or after the first round had concluded for Teddy Bridgewater. But the timing was good for the content because we get to talk about it here on the Take It Easy radio show and make memes about it over on Comical Sports Memes. So that's always the good timing of that one. But what was interesting was, going back to the Panthers side of it, the Panthers have basically taken themselves out of the quarterback running when they could have had their pick of the litter if they had just, what the joke I made, swallowed your pride and started Will Greer at quarterback like I said you should have during the rebuilding series on the Take It Easy podcast back in December of 2019. I also thought Kyle Allen might be still around, but he ended up being cut when the new staff came in after Ron Rivera got fired and they hired Matt Rhule. I just thought it would have worked out a little bit better for the Carolina Panthers in that respect. But what was interesting is Carolina took themselves out of the quarterback running and now want to try and trade down. And what they've unintentionally done brings us to the third report that may signal why the Broncos did the move when they did, which is that there is significant interest, according to this Bleacher Report story, and I want to make sure I get it right here, there is significant interest in the Broncos' number 9 pick. And this is something that makes interesting content coming closer to the draft, because would this mean the Broncos trade down? Are they going for a longer-term rebuild? Is Teddy Bridgewater the same stopgap they're hoping will lead them to a 4-12 season next year? This is the interesting thing that the Broncos have to figure out, is that if they're getting significant interest for the 9 pick, are they going to try and take as many hits at the board to try and rebuild this team and acknowledge, we're not the Chargers, we're not the Chiefs, we're just going to try and rebuild this thing right? But also they might still be in the market for quarterback themselves, keeping all their options open. But for the Broncos, it just does seem like Patton wanted to get his guy, and Patton puts his guy in. Patton plugs his guy in. Maybe he'll start. Maybe he won't. Teddy Bridgewater was a backup before. He may be a backup again. He got his money. People don't realize that he created the trend that we made up of bridge watering, which is a fringe-level starter going to back up for another team in order to potentially play, prove their worth, and get a contract with one of these poor teams to be a starter as a fringe starter. Teddy Bridgewater was hugely successful because he got paid. That was the whole point of going and having that amazing season with New Orleans. Teddy Bridgewater got paid. He got paid, and he's going to keep getting paid, even with whether or not he's playing in Carolina or playing in Denver. Teddy Bridgewater got paid, people, and that is why this is hugely successful for him. Whether or not he's going to play for mediocre Carolina or mediocre Denver, he's the NBA equivalent of Otto Porter, a straight mercenary going to play for your crappy team for $27 million a season. Because the whole point of this is Teddy Bridgewater cashing in on being a fringe starter, because ultimately, as fun as his story was, he's still Teddy Bridgewater, and he was still pretty limited even before his injury and before he went to the Jets and before he ended up with the New Orleans Saints. So from the Broncos side of things, sure, you've got two fringe starters at quarterback. I put Drew Locke as a backup, but Teddy Bridgewater's a fringe starter. So you've got Teddy Bridgewater, you've got Drew Locke, and maybe you're going to bring in another quarterback. Who knows? This just seems like Patton wanting his guy, and it was only for a sixth-round pick. That's the beauty of it. All you had to do was absorb salary cap on Teddy Bridgewater, and probably a lot of it can be converted to roster bonuses. But all you had to do was swallow some money on Teddy Bridgewater and give up a sixth-round pick, which is just a throw-in piece for the Denver Broncos. You are trading that roster spot for cap space. But also talking about trading down, which is a little counterintuitive. Not that sixth-round picks really matter that much, but it's still a little counterintuitive to do that for the money and not get a draft pick attached to it if you're going to trade down from nine, which, according to this third report from the afternoon, might be a possibility now emerging less than, you know, 28 hours until the NFL draft. So that's the interesting side of things for Denver. Let's talk about the number nine pick now, because based on how this draft is going to fall, 8 and 9 basically resemble, and we'll throw 7 in there too with the Detroit Lions. Those two picks resemble the chance for league-altering moves for a really good team to move up and get Justin Fields or Trey Lance, or both, depending on how this thing falls. There's a chance for league-altering moves to break out from this trade. And this is because I think Justin Fields is awesome and because I don't know a lot about Trey Lance, but I trust people saying Trey Lance is awesome, and I see Mac Jones and know Mac Jones is emphatically not awesome and not worth trading up for unless you're the San Francisco 49ers, who for some reason traded up to number 3 and took Mac Jones. 8 and 9 represent a balance of power because there's the 3 blue chippers who we all anticipate will go 4-5-6, 5-6-7, 4-6-7, some order like that. Now, probably 5 and 6 will be blue chippers, but we anticipate the blue chippers will go there and teams won't be trading, letting teams trade up. Teams won't be trading up because those blue chippers are available. First 3 picks are going to be quarterback. Then there's the 3 blue chippers, Penei Sewell, Ja'Marr Chase, Kyle Pitts. They're going to go in some sort of order, 4-5-6 or 5-6-7. Depending on what the Atlanta Falcons want to do. And the most recent report I've seen is that the Atlanta Falcons are still technically taking calls on those picks. And Carolina, Detroit, but Detroit might take a blue chipper based on how 4 goes. Detroit, Carolina, and Denver hold a lot of the chips for the rest of the league because both of them could take the quarterbacks themselves, whether it's Trey Lance or Justin Fields. It looks pretty obvious Justin Fields is going to fall, but Trey Lance still could go 3, could not go 3. Again, it's not that everyone thinks Justin Fields is the 5th best quarterback in this draft. It's just the 49ers think Justin Fields is the 5th best quarterback in this draft. And so they're not going to pick him, and then he's going to fall because those blue chippers are going to get taken by teams that genuinely want Ja'Marr Chase, Kyle Pitts, and Penei Sewell, in the case of the Dolphins, trading back up just to get one of those guys. So this is the interesting thing for Carolina, Detroit, and Denver. You hold all the chips. You hold the balance of power. And because the Patriots, Bears, Washington, Pittsburgh maybe, all are looking to move up and get a quarterback, you can start a bidding war at 7, 8, and 9. Now, they might be trying to do that now. They might be thinking of stashing the picks for themselves. But if Detroit takes Devonta Smith at 7, that's going to be blowing your hand a little bit. Unless you think Devonta Smith is this amazing prospect, which is entirely possible. I always attest, we don't really know exactly what we're doing here in the draft evaluation process, especially myself, who doesn't really watch a lot of tape and takes the words of our friend Blake Jude, our NFL draft expert, for a pretty good portion of my draft analysis. I'll take the words of a guy who's really, really smart when it comes to this draft analysis stuff. And so what I find interesting for three reasons is this Panthers, Lions, Broncos thing. Number one, all these teams can make a case for a quarterback. In fact, I would make the case for all three of those teams to pick Justin Fields because I'd make the case for the Jets to take Justin Fields. So that's automatic value. And every single one of them is showing a hesitancy because of timing, it would appear. And I don't know what the situation looks like. Like, timing could work out or it could not work out. I don't trust any of these teams to get timing right, especially Carolina and Denver, who have just been mediocre for, like, ever since they played in the Super Bowl 6 years ago. 5 years ago? 5 years ago. Five plus years. It was 5 years ago in February. So about 5 or 6 years ago, they've just both been mediocre ever since they played in the Super Bowl. I don't trust them to get it right. History does not bode well for Detroit, although I will give Detroit a little bit of the benefit of the doubt because Detroit is in this new rebuilding phase where they seem to have a plan. And that's ultimately the good thing, is that Detroit, you may have been mediocre for a long time, but at least it looks like you may have a plan. So that's number one. Number two, I really, really, really want Justin Fields to go to the Patriots. Like, I just want this to happen for the simple fact that I feel like this guy is special, that for a year and a half we've been saying this guy's the number two pick in the draft, even after the college football playoff, after he played his last game of the year, we still said this guy is special, and now he's going to fall in the pre-draft process. That seems like some people are making a mistake. They're letting Aaron Rodgers fall to 24 when he could have, should have, would have been the number one pick in 2005. But they're letting Deshaun Watson fall to pick 12. Like, this feels like everyone's making some mental errors and some mental mistakes here going through the draft process. And not everyone. Like, we mentioned the blue chip teams at 4, 5, 6. Atlanta could use a quarterback. I would make the case for Justin Fields. If I were picking at 4, I would pick Justin Fields. Miami took a quarterback last year. Bengals, Miami is the Dolphins, the greatest football team. They run the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. The Cincinnati Bengals at number 5, they took a quarterback last year. So they're obviously out. The Falcons, okay. Like, you could take quarterback, you could take tight end. Sure, okay. Goes both ways. But what's interesting about Detroit, what's interesting about Denver, what's interesting about Carolina, is that I really want Justin Fields to go to the Patriots, and I want one of them to give up that pick. And those are the mediocre teams that usually fall to the Patriots. And again, this is a reputation thing talking. If Justin Fields goes to Denver, I'm going to be sad, but I could also be wrong. And that's a very important part of this draft analysis. I may be very sad, but I may also be very wrong. Both are entirely possible at this point. So there's that situation. I want the mediocre teams to give the Patriots that pick. I want not the mediocre teams to give the Bears that pick because I think the Bears will mess up also. And I also want, like, Washington, if they're going to go up. Could work out, could not. Give Ron Rivera the closest thing to Cam Newton since Cam Newton. Sure. Combination of Cam Newton and Dak Prescott is really the thing I've seen with Justin Fields, is that his body type and skill set, this combination of Cam Newton and Dak Prescott. But with Cam Newton, it was the big body and being bigger than his tight ends that mattered the most. And obviously, that's not Justin Fields. The point overall being, really want the Patriots to go up and get this guy. And it's increasingly looking like a possibility because, like I said, three quarterbacks are going to go at the top. The Falcons could and should take a fourth one, although it's looking more likely like it's going to be Kyle Pitts. And unless we're just talking ourselves into it and nobody really knows, it does seem like some people are reporting that it looks like they're leaning towards Kyle Pitts, but again, there's not a lot of confirmed guarantees here. I think a lot of it has to do with who goes off the board at three, if the Falcons have a certain quarterback in mind. I don't know if they do or not. There's been no indication that they do or don't. Now, I feel like it should be Justin Fields, but there's been no indication either way of if it has or if it hasn't. And so that's why I really am rooting for one of these teams who holds these chips to move, because I want Justin Fields to end up on the Patriots and become a Hall of Famer. Number three reason that is interesting for the 7-8-9 picks, Detroit, Carolina, and Denver, is that we don't trust any of these teams. We don't trust them to make the right pick. And all of them have long rebuilds and positions of need, but are they going to get the right guy that turns around the franchise? Nobody knows that. That's why the draft process is kind of fun, and it's fun to do what we did on the podcast on Wednesday, which is what if everyone redrafted the 2020 draft all over again and redid their picks, and, you know, Carolina ends up with Patrick Queen, and Denver ends up with still Jerry Jeudy. But as Detroit ends up with Justin Jefferson at the top of the draft, like, it's fun to do those rebuilds and retools and redo the stories all over again. But what's also fascinating is reputation does not bode well for any of those teams. So it makes it infinitely more funny with those 7, 8, 9 picks when they hold all the chips. Because imagine you're sitting on like $100,000. You've just robbed a bank and you're totally incompetent. Like, you're sitting on $100,000 and you don't know what to do with it. And that's what I feel like in the case, it could be millions, because if you get the right quarterback, we're talking about millions of dollars. You're sitting on millions of dollars, and you're just like, you have no idea what to do. If you're Detroit, Denver, and Carolina, you just have no idea what to do right now. And there's so many options that could go down, and if I know Carolina's history, they're probably going to pick the worst possible situation for themselves. And if I know the Detroit Lions, they're probably going to do something really incompetent, although this is a new ownership group that does see our new ownership group, new GM, and new coach that seems to have some semblance of a plan. But again, I don't know what the right move is. I don't know if keeping the pick and drafting quarterback is right. I don't know if picking Devonta Smith is right. I don't know if picking Jalen Waddle is right. I don't know if trading down is right. Time is going to tell on that, but it's just, what is it in coordination with the plan that you have for your organization? The Broncos and Panthers are increasingly showing me that their plan is not necessarily the greatest plan, if it exists at all, which explains why Teddy Bridgewater was traded to the Broncos today. It just didn't make a lot of sense either way for the timing of it. The trade itself, yeah, get Teddy Bridgewater back, the quarterback on the Broncos, so be it. Like, he's Bridgewatering all over again. He's going back into the Bridgewatering camp, except he's making all his money this year. He's going to go be a backup, and he's going to Bridgewater Drew Lock. Like, it's a perfect scenario. If the Broncos walk away with a quarterback, perfect scenario, except the Broncos are going to be absolute garbage next year. And maybe Teddy Bridgewater gets a new contract from the Denver Broncos. Maybe that's the win-win situation Teddy Bridgewater gets, is that his contract expires at the end of next season, and he gets a brand spanking new contract extension from the Denver Broncos. Maybe that's Teddy Bridgewater's endgame, in which case he is going to be the greatest fleecer since his former teammate Sam Bradford in the history of the NFL, who made $178 million while never starting in a playoff game. That is going to be the great fleecing of Teddy Bridgewater if he can fleece the Broncos out of another contract again. It's going to be absolutely amazing. So, yeah. That's the situation going on at 7, 8, and 9, and the Bridgewater trade. All that has been very, very interesting as we inch ever so closer to the NFL draft. And to be honest, the Panthers are going to get a lot of shit from me because of how I feel so vindicated by being right. And again, like, sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. Like, we forget about it over time. But this one I just nailed perfectly. Just nailed it. Saying, when we did the rebuilding episode in December of 2019, and I wish I still had the tape on that, when we did that rebuilding episode, I nailed that the Carolina Panthers were going to go 5-11 after they signed Teddy Bridgewater, but also the correct plan would have been just play Will Greer, suck for a season, get Trevor Lawrence, and walk away with the number one pick. It worked out for the Jaguars. They did the exact damn same thing. They started Gardner Minshew for a season. They swallowed their pride, lost 15 in a row, and nabbed the number one pick in the draft. That's what Carolina should have been doing last season. They didn't, and now you'll get to see the Jaguars blossom while Carolina fails. So that's probably the deeply personal point that I have towards the Panthers. It's just I when I gave them the game plan to see where they are now, where they're just kind of like floating around and Matt Rhule is keeping them in perpetual mediocrity, like it just – I feel vindicated by that. That's all I have to say. I just feel vindicated. And David Tepper's interesting too. Like, we don't talk about him enough, but new owner of the Carolina Panthers – and big money guy, like one of the richest owners in the NFL. And a lot of it comes down to, like, he's not necessarily the I'm going to spend whatever it takes because we're within a salary cap sport. The NFL has basically removed that type of owner from the league where you're going to spend whatever it takes because revenue sharing and the salary cap makes it such that all these owners are bringing in about the same amount of revenue outside of their own individual ones. And so Tepper is making money from the Panthers within the confines of the salary cap, willing to manipulate the money a little bit. But again, this is the thing about new owner-itis, which is, you know, hey, let's get a quarterback. But hey, let's get Teddy Bridgewater. Let's get, as a transitional thing, Robbie Anderson, and let's draft all defense. And let's go get the splashy college coach and bring him in, give him a 6-year contract, because if we can salary cap the players, let's just give the coach a gigantic contract so that he'll come over from Baylor. And all of that's interesting for Carolina. But Carolina is also interesting because the Panthers are 2021 was supposed to be the year that the Panthers kind of turned things around. It was supposed to be when the fruits of the labor of the rebuild started paying dividends because you had, you know, a Tyler Johnson, you had a Devin Singletary, you had a Derek Brown and a Jeff Okuda or an Isaiah Simmons or I don't know, whatever else the Panthers would have nabbed in the draft. Maybe a Patrick Queen as we look back on the draft now, or Jeremy Chin, who worked out awesome for them at pick 64, or Derek Brown, or Yetur Gross-Matos, who still has hope, or, you know, Brian Burns is awesome, and Shaq Thompson's a great linebacker, and some of these guys have worked out swimmingly for the Carolina Panthers, and it just hasn't been perfect. And honestly, that's just kind of the issue that the Carolina Panthers find themselves in, is Tepper is looking around. They're kind of mediocre for kind of a while, and it's a tough situation to find yourself in. And so Carolina has that new owner-itis. And Tepper is an interesting guy because he's not like Steve Cohen, but he has like Steve Cohen vibes. Like, if Cohen is a 10 on the scale and 1 is like owner who never says anything, like we don't even know the name of the owner. Who's an owner? We don't know. If 1 is the Titans owner and we have no idea who they are, and 10 is like Steve Cohen, like Tepper's like an 8.5 or a 9 on that scale. Like, not crazy outlandish, but someone who has like personality flavor and kind of wants to be the cool owner, I suppose. And so Tepper is in the Tepper's. I love saying it like Mel Kiper saying Tepper's. David Tepper's is in an interesting place because the Panthers are pretty mediocre. And it's growing pains that the Panthers are going to have to go through with now Sam Darnold and the pointless season of Teddy Bridgewater, with my favorite stat of the season, that the Carolina Panthers were 5-0 when they scored 22 points and 0-11 when they scored under 22 points. just a fun fact for you to walk away with today, is that Carolina was that team last year, that team that, you know, perfectly mediocre, gets the same record as the year before, number 8 pick in the draft, and missing out on the quarterback game. Even though Justin Fields is now falling, so you can still pick a quarterback, that might be the precursor for why they've just moved Teddy Bridgewater, which at which point trading for Sam Darnold is stupid if you're just going to take a quarterback here. But, hey, I don't trust Carolina to make the right moves. Carolina is one of those organizations where I think that they have bad leadership in place, whether it be Tepper or Matt Rhule, where they just make some silly new owner-itis decisions. And there's growing pains that have to go through, and unfortunately, I don't think this one's going to work out for the Panthers, so they'll turn over Matt Rhule, they'll turn over whoever the new GM will be, or maybe the GM keeps his job, because GMs seem to last longer in this NFL profession thing. It's why I don't understand why Dave Gettleman is still making the picks for the New York Giants going into this draft. It's a lot of confusion hanging around this draft, pretty much in all different places, too. By the way, if you're looking for some updates here, Trey Lance is now the slight favorite to be picked ahead of Justin Fields, which means that people still think Mac Jones is going to be the 3 pick. And for those who don't know already about this, it's just we are very much anti-Mac Jones here. Multiple reasons. One, eye test tells you that dude's not better than Justin Fields under no circumstances. Has that man ever been better than Justin Fields in his career? I don't know if the translation to the NFL is going to matter, because it's not like Justin Fields is some terrible prospect like De'Eriq King. Like, things worked out pretty damn well for Justin Fields and both Mac Jones and him, because Mac Jones was not a top prospect until last season. I can affirm that to you. And also the other reason I think I'm more anti-Mac Jones and why I've doubled down on him is because the type of people who are overly supportive of Mac Jones are the same people who like putting American flags in their bio pictures. And those are generally just people I like to go against. They're people who like putting American flags in their bios. Just a general sentiment that I am not necessarily the biggest supporter of those people and a lot of the beliefs that they have. Just a general sentiment. And so that's kind of the idea that I look at with Mac Jones. And you know what? I could be wrong. Pretty sure I'm not going to be wrong, but I could be wrong. And I acknowledge that through all the drafts, as someone who last year, on this very day, the day before the NFL draft last year, blasphemed against the Dolphins for passing, for the notion that they might pass on Tua Tagovailoa with the number 5 pick in the NFL draft. And boy, has that not aged very well under any circumstances. So I guess time will tell on that one. 49ers. Let's talk some 49ers here. Because obviously it's the thing that has been buried into the ground. We haven't necessarily done a lot of 49ers talk on the Take It Easy radio show, but, you know, pretty much everywhere 49ers talk has been buried into the ground. As, you know, they made the big move up to the number 1 pick, and, you know, it's going to work out all right for them. But I'm interested because Carolina, Denver, like, yeah, those are teams that, you know, they're pretty mediocre. And so trading Teddy Bridgewater keeps the cycle of the NFL going, but it's not all that important. The 49ers matter a lot. Like, this pick for the 49ers, the ability to get up to number 3 matters a lot. And I said when the move first came down, I actually wrote in our Slippery Slope Sports blog, that if you're Kyle Shanahan, you're going to get another job somewhere in the NFL. You've got 6 years of contract. You got a 5-year extension before last season. So I guess you've now got 5 years left. If you're John Lynch, you got a 5-year contract extension. If you get fired, it won't be till years down the road. You've got the safety and security to make this move. And also, if you get fired, both of you are probably going to find another job in the NFL. Maybe less so John Lynch, but probably Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan is probably going to get another head coaching job after the 49ers. So he's got a decade of being a head coach in the NFL. He has the freedom. He has the leeway to make these types of moves. And I think it is a genius move to go up to the number 3 pick. Then I question whether they know what the hell they're doing because they're about to pick Mac Jones as the number three pick in the draft. And I laugh at that idea. But other people don't, and I could be wrong. I'm just a blaspheming guy who has sticking to the guns that I do. Like, I don't think the pre-draft process has changed the fact that Justin Fields looked totally awesome, not just in the college football playoff, but also throughout 2 years at Ohio State, another year at Georgia where he didn't really play, but also maybe the greatest high school recruit since Trevor Lawrence of the last 5 years. I can't think of anyone that would be higher than those two. So that's kind of the cool situation that you find yourself in. I know Tua was number one recruit, too, coming out of his draft class. But the 49ers are apparently, and the latest rumor at this point is, Mac Jones is Shanahan's guy, Trey Lance is the front office's guy. And Kyle Shanahan has the final say over executive decisions in that organization. It all comes down to whether or not Shanahan is going to secede to his staff and trust his football people more than his own nihilism. And I call it nihilism because he's Mac Jones. If the front office were saying Mac Jones and he were saying Trey Lance, I'd say stick to your damn guns, Kyle Shanahan. And because he's saying Mac Jones in the front office is saying Trey Lance, I'm saying trust your football people. So in the spirit of transparency, that's where things stand on that case. It's just I believe in Trey Lance more than Mac Jones because I don't believe in Mac Jones, and Trey Lance is a total unknown. So maybe I bet on the total unknown because I know a lot of people are saying that he's awesome and that he's really good and could be the second-best quarterback coming out of this class, or maybe the first-best quarterback coming out of this class. Imagine telling people in 2018 that Lamar Jackson would be the best quarterback coming out of that draft class when he fell to 32 in the draft, last pick of the first round. Yeah. Imagine telling people back then that Lamar Jackson was going to be the worst quarterback coming out of his draft class. But this is just interesting that the 49ers, like the Panthers, are just kind of bouncing around different ideas where it's just like, hey, we've traded up to number three because we know we need a quarterback, but we don't know which quarterback we're going to take. And now we're a week out from the draft, and maybe we're going to take a quarterback. But also, we're thinking about keeping Jimmy Garoppolo and having him start for a year, but now we're shopping Jimmy Garoppolo around. But now the Broncos just traded for Teddy Bridgewater. So now only the Patriots are interested in Jimmy Garoppolo. And, oh, by the way, Patriots might be trading up right now in the draft to get the number 8 pick or the number 9 pick and drafting Justin Fields anyways. So we're running out of people who actually want Jimmy Garoppolo or need Jimmy Garoppolo. you could have traded him. I think he ultimately might get cut, but if that's the case, just keep him. Unless you desperately need the salary cap relief, just keep Jimmy Garoppolo. See if someone gets hurt and you can trade next trade deadline. But Jimmy Garoppolo's already been traded once at the trade deadline. It's not out of this world. But, yeah, this is the interesting thing with the 49ers. It's just every week it's something new, and they've made this franchise-altering decision that we're going to take a quarterback. But it's just interesting to see which quarterback they end up choosing. It's going to be interesting to find out because I, for one, am interested to see what the 49ers do because, like I said, off the top of talking to 49ers, the 49ers actually matter a lot. They matter a lot because they're a really good, well-built team. And Raheem Morris is going to replace Robert Saleh, and that's going to be a good little addition to keep the train rolling. They've got all of this core from a Super Bowl team, or at least most of the core, with Nick Bosa and Rick Armstead, now Javon Kinlaw, which, you know, okay, and Fred Warner is now, you know, from obscure prospects to all-pro linebacker. 49ers have a lot working for them, and so it's so interesting that we just waited out. And this is kind of not like the, should they take Jones, should they take Lance, should they take Fields? I buried that in. We're just filling content by saying the same thing over again, which is understandable. Understandable. We're just filling content and saying the same things over and over again. But I find it interesting with the 49ers that this is a franchise that matters a lot. There's a lot going into the pick the same way a lot was going into who the Dolphins are going to pick next year, which a lot of it had to do with the draft was pretty straightforward last year. You had one pick was going to be Burrow, two was going to be Chase, three was pretty much going to be Okuda, four was the Giants who weren't going to take a quarterback with Daniel Jones, and then it was Tua, it was Justin Herbert, and after that there wasn't a ton of intrigue after that. It's just like, which wide receiver is going to be taken? Which offensive lineman is going to be taken? There weren't a ton of blue-chip prospects, and to be honest, after doing this, redoing the 2020 NFL draft class, it might be one of the weaker draft classes of the last 20 years or 10 years, I guess. Last couple generations, the last 10 years, it's going to be one of the weaker draft classes. When Jeremy Chinn is your number four best player at this point, and you know Patrick Queen and Chase Claypool are going 7 and 8, like it's probably going to be one of the weaker draft classes that we've seen in the last 10 years. Let's say 10 years, two generations. I call a generation every 5 years. Generations by like Gen Z, Gen X, and I don't know what generations are called now, Generation Alpha or whatever, is like being born right now. But people of my generation, like Gen Z or Gen X or Millennial, whatever you want to call it, those are usually like 15 years. And I kind of think like generations should be like there's two or three within each generation. So I say like every 5 years is a generation. So of the last, like, decade, 10 years, since the magical 2011 draft class, I bet you 2020 looks like it's going to go down as one of the weaker draft classes of the last 10 years, which is funny because of how much I myself in our first draft that we covered as, like, an actual, like, talent analyst or, like, an actual, like, journalist, analyst, scout, whatever. Blake Jude is more our scout. But first year covering sports in, like, this sort of manner was so much a 49ers – or not 49ers, a so much scrutiny around a draft class that it ultimately ended up being pretty weak out the gate. Obviously only 1 year in, but looks like it's going to be a pretty weak draft class. You're going to have your Justin Jeffersons. You're going to have your Chase Claypool. You're going to have your Chase Young, and Justin Herbert's going to be the defining guy from the class. But ultimately it looks like it's going to be a pretty weak draft class. And, you know, Jeremy Chinn – pretty good piece. Looks like it's going to be, but Jeremy Chinn being the fourth best player coming out of the class or fifth best player, not necessarily the greatest thing in the world. And obviously the book is still out on Joe Burrow, but I find it interesting just how much we put into the draft evaluation process, how much we get out of it. And this year it means even more just because it feels like it's going to be a really good class. There's a lot of good quarterbacks, a lot of true blue chip prospects. Last year, there was only one in Chase Young, and according to our buddy Blake Jude, Chase Young and Joe Burrow were, like, the only blue chippers in last year's class. And as we look back, Isaiah Simmons, not that great. Derrick Brown, not that great. C.J. Henderson, not that great. A lot of bad picks in the middle there that we, you know, banked a lot of attention and emphasis on, and didn't work out quite the way we wanted to. It's going to go down as one of the weaker draft classes. But this year matters a whole lot, and it's got a team at the top, at the center of all of it, the 49ers, that actually matters a whole lot. And so it makes it infinitely more interesting as we go closer and closer towards the NFL draft. All right, we are over 24 hours. We're under 24 hours from our NFL draft special here on the Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash and available on YouTube. But we do have the NFL draft coming up, and that show tomorrow is going to be infinitely interesting. Maybe if we have more coverage, we'll do it. If you want our final mock draft, it will be coming out on Take It Easy. You can check that out in the morning. It's going to be like about an hour and a half or so. It's going to be a really fun mock draft. And so I'm intrigued to see how that goes in terms of like people's responses right before the draft. And, of course, NFL Draft Special here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, and for our people on YouTube. Shout out to the one person who's tuned in on YouTube. Can't see who you are, but thank you for stopping in live to the show. It is much appreciated. So I think we're going to call it here today. I've got no more draft coverage or anything of those sorts. This was a really fun episode. I appreciate everyone who stopped in here today to check us out, and we got some live Teddy B news in the midst of it. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in to the Take It Easy radio show. We'll be back again tomorrow. And as always, take it easy. Talk to you again tomorrow.